This episode is brought to you by SD Sober Living. If you or someone you know needs a safe and supportive recovery home, then reach out to SD Sober Living at www.sdsoberliving.org or call 619-625-0769. That's 619-625-0769. Come get some San Diego recovery and some fuck fentanyl at SD Sober Living.
Parental advisory due to unnecessary. Fuck it. This is a fucking popcorn, bitch. I'm about to let my fucking nuts hang.
Right on, brother.
Welcome to the Fuck Fentanyl Podcast. I am Luis Romero. I am the Fuck Fentanyl guy. Today I have a really cool guest. I got my event collaborator, Nick, from SD Sober Living.
What up?
How you doing, man?
Good, brother. How are you?
Well, man, like, I've known you for a good minute now. I actually remember you being a secretary at the shop, man. But you, like, and it's so crazy to see where you're at in life, man. Like, you're doing big things.
It's wild.
Man, like, absolutely love your sober living.
Thank you.
I was actually there just last night, and dude, I mean, that meeting was popping. It was over 50 people.
It's amazing.
And dude, I mean, that's really awesome that you established that in just a very short amount of time.
It's a beautiful thing.
Man, and you're also from Chula Vista, too.
I am.
You grew up here?
Yeah, dude. It's good to be back in
the place where back in the neighborhood.
Yeah, dude. A lot of it began. So, yeah.
Fuck yeah, dude. I love it here. You know, I know that I got in a lot of trouble here, but this is my home.
Yep.
But yeah, dude. So, I guess we'll go from the very beginning. How was your life, man, growing up?
All right. So yeah, dude, my story's pretty different than a lot of people in NA and in recovery. So I'm an only child of a single parent, that being my mom. And I was raised by her and my grandmother. I was born in New York, and most of my family lives over there.
Yeah.
And my mom fell in love with California on a trip out here, so she moved out here.
Awesome.
And yeah, I was at the age of two, I think, I moved out here. So pretty much from California, as much as you can be, not being born here.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, man, my life wasn't really bad as a child. No abuse. Okay. I wasn't around any drugs or alcohol. I didn't find out until way later that my grandma was an alcoholic and stopped drinking right before I was born.
Okay.
So I had no idea that addiction really exists in my family at all. I thought I was pretty much the black sheep, you know?
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And, but yeah, dude, a good childhood. Pretty much a loner all throughout school. Mm-hmm. I may have had one or two friends.
I can relate to
never
that.
Never the popular kid.
Never. Nah.
Never. And
I never exceeded. I never did sports. Yeah. I never, you know, all that. I get
exactly.
That.
Yeah, no sports. And to this day, I don't even like sports. I envy those who excel in sports.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, dude. But yeah, man, it was kind of lonely. Growing up, you know, it was like I had one really good friend, never a big circle.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed out of trouble, you know, with the really bad stuff for a long time. But even as young as kindergarten, I remember I'd get sent to the principal's office like every single day.
Really?
And maybe that teacher had it out for me.
Probably did.
But I was just always in trouble, and I would get the same exact notes sent home. And it was always like, he's not dumb. Like, he could do the work, but he just won't. He just won't. He won't do it. He just doesn't seem to care about school. And that was the truth. I really didn't. I just wanted to fuck around with my friends. And
Yeah, dude.
I had a hard time prioritizing things
like homework and shit like that.
Yeah,
like,
no, forget it.
Yeah.
No, I'm a fun having kind of guy. And homework's not fun. Yeah, dude, it was pretty much all the way like that until middle school. And then in
middle school you went to?
Bernardo Heights in Rancho Bernardo.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And for a short period of time. So I made it through 6th and 7th grade, and I think it was the end of 7th grade. I would have been like 12. And you know, I'm a little bit older and wiser now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Man, what is it? Like, why are all these kids over here and their parents got desert toys and they throw parties at their parents' house every weekend. They have all the hot girlfriends. And I'm over here with my fucking one loner friend eating hot Cheetos every day."
Those are the days,
Those
dude.
Are the days. Jeez, dude. And then, you know, in my 12-year-old brain, it occurred to me that drugs, alcohol and drugs were the reason that they were so cool and I wasn't. And they had such a huge fucking crowd of friends at lunch. You know, you'd watch them, to be like 30 of them. And there'd be me and my buddy sitting on the fucking bench off to the side, you know, by ourselves. And I and I envied that. And I really wanted to be more included in things. And not having any brothers or sisters, growing up without a father. I did a lot of alone time, you know? And so I figured out that smoking pot was my gateway into, not into drugs, but into having a group of friends.
For validation.
Yeah, exactly. For validation, for being, you know, quote unquote popular. And so I think my addiction really began as more of a desire to fit in.
And I think that's a lot, that's the case for a lot of people.
And that's the common theme with addicts for sure. And so, you know, I got like $5 a day of lunch money, which back then
that was actually something.
That was enough to get food then. And I was like,
could buy a burrito for $5 back then.
You could. You totally could. And man, better times. And so in my mind, I was like, how the hell am I going to get money to get pot? Because, you know, my mom, if I ask for money, she wants a receipt to, did you go to the movies? I want to see the receipt from the movie theater.
What movie, what time, and what the
exactly. Whose friend's parents are you with? And so I had to be slick, man. I was really sheltered up until that point. My mom was like overprotective and overbearing, helicopter parent for sure. And I know she meant it in the best ways, and she's an excellent mother. But I just didn't know what the real world was. And so I funneled my $5 a day of lunch money. And I did I did this for 2 weeks. So 10 school days of eating like other people's hot Cheetos.
Manipulating the system.
Yep, no chicken sandwiches or any of that shit. It was just, you know, munching on hot Cheetos, and and I eventually stacked up $50. And I went to like the one person I knew who could get me weed, and this kid Louie, he was a douchebag, man. And I said, hey man, can you get me weed? And he didn't have a good reputation for being an honest guy. And I gave him the money, and I waited probably a month to get this eighth of weed. A month.
And
of course, the constant phone calls. Did you rip me off?
What the fuck?
And I finally
I've been going after
it.
Him after 2 days.
Dude, I couldn't believe I got it. And when I look back now, it's so crazy that I was willing to sacrifice the most basic of human needs, like food, for an addiction that I didn't even have yet. What the fuck? That's crazy. I hadn't even gotten high once in my life. I had no idea what getting high was like, but I was willing to not eat to get it for 2 weeks.
The sacrifice we make.
Fucking insane. And so, I mean, it's pretty obvious that I was an addict from a young age. Were some other behaviors I did that were just red flags. And, but my family's pretty old school, and addiction is not a talked about thing, and it's like super swept under the rug. And you know, my mom and my grandma have explained to me, like, you know, in the '50s and the '60s, everybody was about how their family looked to the neighbors and to the rest of the community. On the surface, right? And so if somebody had a drug problem or an alcohol problem, they didn't talk about
it. They didn't want to hear about
Nobody would come out and say, I'm gay or I'm an alcoholic or any of that shit, because, you know, and so it was really hush hush, which led to a lot of, you know, people having some deep buried issues. And my mom's no exception to that. And so I think because of that, she was raised by a really old fashioned Irish Catholic family. And addiction was just never something I was really educated on. You know, I knew what drugs were, but, you know, I was pretty naive. And pot was like, man, I am a fucking rule breaker if I smoke pot. Like, I thought I was a badass.
What a taboo you're fucking doing.
Super taboo, And everything I do, man, I have to take to the extreme. I'm a very on or off. There's no gray area. And so, you know, of course, I smoke pot the first time, and all of a sudden, it's like people want to talk to me, and I have something in common with others. And it was like, dude, this is what I've been missing my whole fucking life. All of a sudden I have friends, and I'm not this loner. And sure enough, that's how it went. The rest of my short period in middle school, I had friends and I had a lot of fun. And, you know, I'll never tell you that I didn't have fun using. That'd be a fucking lie. I wouldn't have kept doing it.
Absolutely.
Know? And I had a lot of fun. And, but, you know, until it wasn't. And, eventually in eighth grade, I started selling weed. Like a lot of it. And I got way too carried away. And one day I decided that I couldn't wait until the end of school to smoke pot. So my friend and I, devised this like devious plan the day before about how we were going to leave the campus on our break to go smoke.
Come back.
Yeah, and nobody undetected. Would catch us. Undetected. Yeah. So we do it. And then we hear yelling and like the principal and like the counselors and everything. They're fucking chasing us.
Oh, fuck.
And it turns out that one of the yard duty people overheard us talking about our devious plan. And
told was it the well principal, kept?
Dude, we had a school resource cop. So there was an SDPD on the camp. Yeah, it was bad. So we run off campus. Now we're being chased by them and we hid.
Uh-huh.
And we hid on this fucking like cul-de-sac hill thing. Uh-huh. And the principal was driving around in his car yelling our names, and we're sitting there smoking pot.
While you're doing it.
While we're doing it, we're like, shh, be quiet. He's going to hear you. And our, you know, who knows what goes through a 12-year-old's mind, but we walked back onto campus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we could have stayed gone and probably just gotten like a little slap on the wrist, but we went back onto campus and tried to continue the second half of the school day.
Uh-huh.
And of course, we were pulled out of class and we were high as a kite.
Oh,
and,
Jesus.
yeah, they expelled me and they called my mom. And I think that was the first time she really knew that I was not that good of a kid anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, I had weed on me and it was a shit show.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your reputation is
there. It
out.
Goes. Yeah. My gig was up, dude. Yeah. She knew. And so I got moved to another middle school that I absolutely hated. I was like the only white kid there.
Which one is this?
And Black Mountain.
Oh, okay.
And I was bullied, and oh my God, it fucking sucked. All that hard work I had done to become somebody popular.
Just to get fucked with.
Yeah, just to get fucked. Now I'm just the new loner guy all over again.
Yeah.
Like, it sucked. And so somewhere during this time, I had a really bad, I used to ride a lot of BMX.
Oh, okay.
And I flew off a hill. I think I was 13, and I split a good chunk of my head open and blew out my left eardrum, and it was fucking bad.
Ooh, fuck.
Yeah, and it was really bad. And the girl who was with me nobody had cell phones back then, but she had one that was her parents. Yeah. And
like a flip phone?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And she called 911 and she gave them the location of where we were, and the phone died like immediately after.
Oh, dude.
And they came out there, and the paramedics called my mom and they said, you know, hey, your son's been in a pretty bad bike accident. We're going to the hospital.
Shit.
And she got in the car and my helmet was in the back seat. And right before I had left the house that day, she said, grab your helmet out of the back seat of my car. And she said she saw the helmet and just knew that I fucked myself up. And so,
dude.
Yeah, I spent like a month in the hospital. It was pretty
bad.
Yeah, I had spinal taps done like every other day because I was leaking cerebral spinal fluid everywhere. And
Jesus.
It was a nightmare. And when I got out of the bed for the first time, I had to learn to walk again. And it was bad. And
full rehabilitation.
Pretty much, yeah. Full rehabilitation. It was bad.
Fuck, dude.
And right around this time, my grandma, who had been raising me because my mom worked a lot, died.
Uh-huh.
And so she passed away. And then it was like the perfect storm of shit that all happened at the same time. The bike accident, which probably fucked my head up. Who knows?
Yeah.
And then she died. And that was really hard for me to go through. And then right after that, I get involved with these older kids. I couldn't tell you how the hell I met them now, but one of them had coke.
And I
didn't say no to anything. Mm-hmm. And I tried the coke, and I loved it, of course.
Yeah.
And I had a few more friends now to hang out with, and they were older, so I thought they were really cool.
Uh-huh.
And eventually, I learned how expensive coke was.
And yeah, so, a little pricey.
And so when I would go to parties with my friends from school, I would go into their parents' bedroom and steal their checkbooks.
I
was not gonna say take no for an answer. I was getting that coke.
Yeah.
And so I would write the checks out to my older friends who were 18. They would cash it, keep like half the money, and then we'd go buy like a few 8-balls of coke and just fucking go crazy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for a while, and I eventually got arrested when I was 13. And I was driving my mom's car. It was like 2:00 in the morning. Uh-huh. I was like drunk, I was on somas, I was coked out. It was just a shit show.
Uh-huh.
And I pulled out of my apartment complex and I saw a cop, so I put the car in reverse and parked it.
Yeah.
And I got out of the car and a cop, well, he saw me and he came up and he said, hey man, how old are you? And I looked at him, I was like, 13. Like, you know?
Yeah.
And he's like, no, come here. And dude, I had so much shit on me, checkbooks and pills and like a 30 pack of beer in the trunk of the car. It was just a nightmare. And they hit me with like 6 different felonies. Oh, and fuck. So I went to juvie and I ended up doing around 9 months.
Oh, no shit.
And for a kid,
that's a stretch.
That's a stretch for a 13-year-old. Yeah, juvenile sentencing's pretty light usually.
Yeah, usually.
And that was like hell for me, dude. My mom was a federal parole officer for like 20 years.
Oh, fuck. Yeah. No way.
And so, dude, I had been fed these stories of what jail was
like. Yeah.
Obviously, none of them true. But
you know, right. Trying to scare you.
Yeah. Oh, dude. And oh, it worked. And so, dude, in my head, when I'm getting arrested, I'm thinking, dude, I'm going to get butt raped. And
13 years old. Jesus.
I was a fucking mess, dude. And I got there and I was like, oh, this will be quick and easy. They can't do this. I'm a kid, you know? No, they fucking can.
Yeah.
And they did. And I went to Campo and I got fucked up.
Ratchet to Campo.
Yeah, I got fucked up and beat up and got in a fight up there and went back and reassessed and had to start my Campo time all over again.
Oh, Jesus.
And it became a long thing, right? And so I wasn't privy to how probation or any of that shit worked.
Uh-huh.
And like I said, I was naive. And so I would get out and immediately with the day I got out, I called my friends. Hey, I'm out. Let's get fucked up.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And they knew. They're like, aren't you on probation? And I was like, yeah, so what?
Well, no,
yeah, who cares? Yeah. And so I'd get fucked up. And then, like, the next day, the PO would come to the house. And I'd have, like, coke in my dresser drawer or something. They'd find it, and I'd go back.
Yeah.
And then it was, like, 6 months. And then it was, like, you know, whatever. And this went on pretty much till I turned 18.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, it just didn't stop.
And, so you were in juvie system? From 13 to 18?
Pretty much the whole time. I might have spent like an accumulative year not locked up.
There were
times where I got out and went back a day later.
Wow.
I just couldn't stay out of trouble, dude. I was just a stubborn kid. And I had doctors telling my mom that I was like rapid cycle bipolar and all these different mental conditions. And I don't think I was. And they stuck me on this fucking cocktail of medications.
Of course, yeah.
That made me a straight zombie.
Of course.
And
he's fine now.
yeah, right? Exactly.
Drooling and
Just sleeping like 20 hours a day. It's just ridiculous. And that fucked up a big part of my life. I missed out on a lot. Mm-hmm. And so after I got into enough trouble in Rancho Bernardo, my grandma died.
Yeah.
My mom lost that income from my grandma that she was bringing in, and it was just too expensive of a town for her to live
in. Oh, yeah.
And that's when we moved to Chula Vista.
Oh, yes. But the neighborhood.
The neighborhood, dude.
Yeah.
When I got off the freeway, it was like flashbacks. Yeah.
Fuck, dude.
One after another. And that, you know, my addiction was around, but this is where it took off.
Oh,
this
for sure.
is really where it took off. And
it can be a wild town over here.
It can be. The cops are nuts. The people are fun. Yeah, dude. The bars are crazy.
Yeah.
If you're not.
I never got to experience the bars.
Oh, dude.
I got clean when I was 22. So I was kind of a.
Oh, yeah. That didn't happen.
But yeah. Yeah, I know.
That's
all
right. I'll tell you the story.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But man, so you moved over here.
Moved over here. And I think I was still on probation when I got here. And they put me on, I think they called it ESP. It was like the electronic surveillance for the ankle bracelet.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived in this really old, shitty apartment, really on Roosevelt Street, between 3rd and 4th and H&G, right by LaBella's.
Right by LaBella's. And I know exactly where you're
The bank
talking.
On the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's where I grew up. And the place was so old. It had like a fucking iron bathtub and like wires hanging anywhere, everywhere. And the machine that they use, they call this machine... Right, and you hook it up to your landline. You have to have a landline.
At least back then, that's how it was.
Mm-hmm. And they would call it, and it would like ring once, and you don't pick up the phone, and then it goes to this fucking machine that sends like a signal to the ankle bracelet.
Holy shit.
It's not GPS, but it'll tell them they can set it like 10 yards, 20 yards, 30 yards, whatever from the perimeter, and it'll tell them if the ankle bracelet is within range of the house. Well, dude, I'm telling you, I'm not making this up. The house was so old, the fucking thing malfunctioned like crazy. And I was actually doing good. I had been off drugs and everything for like almost a year, probably. No program or nothing.
Yeah, I
just stopped.
Just stopped.
Cigarettes even. I quit everything.
Wow.
And I was doing really good. And I get a knock on the door one morning, and it's the home supervision officer who has to see you once a day, every fucking day.
Uh-huh.
And they have this binder, and you sign your name saying you've been visited by them.
Uh-huh.
And he came to the door, and he didn't have the book in his hand.
Uh-huh.
And I knew from getting locked up that that's not a good sign.
Yeah.
And so he's like, hey, Nicholas, why don't you come outside and talk to me? And I was like, motherfucker. And I turned around to run back through house.
Yeah.
And I knew I didn't do anything wrong, but I knew what that meant.
Yeah.
And I tried to go through.
You know when it's going back.
Yeah, there was no way. And so my door wasn't locked. I fucked up. And he opened it and he grabbed me and locked me up. And I couldn't fit. And he said, oh, yeah, you've been leaving the house every night at like 3 o'clock in the morning. I said, dude, what are you fucking talking about? I said, wow. I got neighbors. Like, it was a tiny little complex, and like, neighbors can all see everyone's front door.
Yeah.
Even they came outside when they heard the commotion, and they're like, dude, this kid doesn't leave at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And he didn't care. He arrested me anyways.
Damn.
Yep.
So there was a complete just malfunction, and they just held you accountable.
Didn't even look into it.
No research or nothing. Oh, yeah. He obviously just fucked with this thing. Yep. And then.
So, dude, it gets worse. They locked me up. I probably spent like a few weeks before finally the judge was like, all right, let's let him out and put a different ankle bracelet in a different machine, right?
Uh-huh.
We'll start up. Maybe it was the machine since he says he didn't leave. And he comes back like a week later and arrests me again for the same fucking thing. And it's are you kidding me? So I was locked up twice. Only time in my life I was locked up for something I didn't do wrong. Only time.
God bless it.
God bless this fucking justice system. Only time, dude. And finally, my lawyer had a real good idea, and he said, why don't we hook up an ankle bracelet in the house while he's locked up, attach it to something that can't be fucking moved, and see what happens.
Uh-huh.
And so they did. They attached the ankle bracelet to something in the house that couldn't be moved, and sure enough, the fucking like water heater was walking out of the house at 3 a.m.
How did they do that?
Yeah, how did they do that? Yeah, so I went to trial and won. My dumbass probably should have sued, but of course, again, I was
so naive.
That would have been a hell of a lawsuit, dude. I'm sure. Yep.
A lot of drugs would have been bought with that money.
Right? Yeah. Probably good I didn't sue, actually. Yeah. I was probably like 16 or 17 when this happened. When I turned 18, they said, do you want to go to county jail for like 2 weeks and get taken off juvenile probation finally? And I was supposed to be on for a year.
Dude.
And I had been on for like 5. And I was like, are you kidding me? 2 weeks? Fuck yeah, dude. Let's go right
100%
now.
100% I'll do that.
And I did it. And they took me off. And it was like, oh, man, the chains are off. Like, here's no more drug testing. No more reporting.
Dude.
I'm fucking free. It took me a fucking year to get a DUI after that. And
shit.
I found alcohol. And I had been drinking since a young age.
Yeah.
And but for some reason, when I was dating a girl who was a bartender.
Oh,
and so I was able to drink at a bar, and that just made me feel like an adult, and it made me feel like someone I wasn't, and I loved it.
Yeah.
And I didn't even like football, dude. And I would go in there on a Sunday morning to drink beer and watch the football game and act like I knew what the fuck was going
go
on.
Go team.
Yeah. Home run.
It's football. What are you talking about?
And I just loved the feeling of like being included in a bar with a bunch of other drunk fucking losers.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
But we were, dude.
Right.
And so I got really carried away with alcohol. Alcohol was like, it didn't do for me what any of the other drugs had ever done for me. It was like, holy shit, I'm not afraid to like talk to a girl and get rejected, or I'm not afraid to fucking do crazy shit in my car. I was really into building race cars at this time and drifting. And it just gave me the balls to do all the things that I knew were too stupid to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. And I was so naive to dependency and addiction. I still had no fucking clue what any of this was about.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got the DUI, I had to go to an AA meeting as a result. I had to go to like 35 or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And dude, I was just too young. I believe you can be too young for this sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And I was just too young, and I was too stubborn. And the first meeting I went to, I stole the stamp. And I stamped my sheet like 30 times. I went back to court and I got all this praise. Oh, good job.
Good job.
And I was sitting there like, you dumb motherfuckers. I was so proud of myself for scheming him, you know? And then that was it. It was like when I got arrested with the DUI, I flew past a cop going like 150 something at like 3 a.m. on my way to the casino
on
the 8 East. And they took the car. It was a car I had built. It was an old 240, and I was like my baby.
Uh-huh.
And they took me, but I had a bunch of cash on me because I was going to the casino.
Uh-huh.
So I bailed out the next morning, no problem. And then when I called about my car, there was no 30-day hold on it. So I got my car back right after I got out of jail, and it was like all of it went away with like $500.
Shit.
And it was like, again, a fucking slap on the wrist. It just felt like I never had any serious consequences, and I developed this mentality of I can pretty much get myself out of anything.
Yeah, I'm untouchable.
I'm untouchable, exactly. And so obviously I didn't stop drinking. In the DUI classes, I was the youngest one. I was 19.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, I was the youngest one by far. And most of these guys were like career alcoholics,
who had been in and out of there. They've been in and out of there.
Yeah. And I remember one day in the group setting, the counselor was like, "So do you think you'll do this again?" And I was like, "No way, dude. Not only am I not going to drink and drive again, I'm never going to drink again." Wow. And they all laughed. And I was like,
damn,
fuck you guys. You know, I ain't know what
I thought. I thought they were supposed to be like encouraging,
supportive.
That.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, and I couldn't understand it then. And they all said, dude, you're gonna do this again. You may not get caught, but you're not done.
Yeah,
and it's because these guys had been going to meetings their whole life, and they understood addiction. And I had no idea that I was an addict at this time. I just thought I was young and I liked to party.
Yeah,
and they saw in me what I had not yet seen in myself.
I see.
And
they see where you're heading with it.
Exactly. It's probably hard to watch, really, you know, being older and seeing someone young just starting off and knowing how fucking bad that road is going to get for them.
Yeah.
And so now I know why they were laughing at me, or with me, whatever. And they were right. I definitely didn't stop. I might have made it a week after that without drinking, but I went right back to it. And for a long time in Chula Vista, my life just consisted of working, getting off of work, getting fucking hammered, and then going to my friend's house and smoking like a pound of weed. And this was like just every night. And it was, I maintained like just barely, but I maintained just enough.
Yeah.
And then this is
when you were working at LaBella's?
No, I was working at AutoZone at this
time. Oh, yeah, AutoZone. Yeah.
Yep. And I worked my way up to becoming a manager at AutoZone. And then the addiction was really slow. The progression was really slow with the alcohol. But eventually it got to the point where I think I drank before work on a Sunday. I didn't have to go until like late afternoon. My buddy and I went and played pool, and I was like, fuck it, I'll have a few beers.
Yeah.
And I went to work drunk and realized how much more I liked being drunk at work than being sober at work.
It is way more fun.
Yeah. And so I literally never went back to work not drunk ever again.
Right.
And that obviously led to my downfall. And then when I became manager, if I wanted that management position, I had to take it at a different store. So I went to the Spring Valley AutoZone. And it was there that shit really went downhill. And we hired this kid, and I didn't know he was a quote-unquote recovering heroin addict.
Oh,
shit. And I had dabbled with pills here and there, you know, like for a weekend in Mexico taking oxys and shit.
Uh-huh.
Never on them long enough to have dependency issues or anything like that.
Sure.
And we hired this kid, and I got high with him after work, and he said, hey, man, you ever smoked Roxy?
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, I ain't know you even could smoke these things. No way. And, you know, right? you want to try it? Yeah. Fuck, I never say no. Of course I do. And I did, and I fell in love. And it was like, fuck every other drug. This was where it was at. And I don't care about girls. I don't care about cars. Yeah. I don't care about relationships. Nothing.
Yeah.
And it was like, just give me more of this forever. Yeah. And it became my one and only love.
Oh, fuck yeah.
And it was everything to me.
That opiate, fucking high, dude.
It's so bad. It's. And so the pills got too expensive pretty quickly. And I was getting Roxy's for cheap back then, maybe like $7 for a 30.
Oh, okay.
They were fucking cheap.
That's pretty affordable.
Yeah, for the little blue 30s, they were cheap. And but we were smoking like 10 or 15 pills a day, dude. It was getting.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Can't afford it. Yeah. Nah. And one day I woke up and I hadn't smoked any oxys, and I was fucking feeling like a train hit me, and I was crawling out of my skin, and he called me, he said, hey man, you want to go score? And I said, I don't know, man, I'm not feeling too good, I'm feeling pretty sick. And he's like, well, yeah, you're probably dope sick. And I was like, dope sick? What are you talking about?
Wow, you didn't know.
I had no idea, dude. I'm telling you, I was really naive. And he's like you can't just stop, dude. And I was like, what do you mean I can't just stop? You're telling me that I have to fucking smoke these things every day just to feel decent enough to get, not even high at this point, just normal. To get out of bed and do anything? And he's like, yeah, man. And I was like, yeah, let's go score. and I couldn't get the fucking pills, and the guy was out, and that's when the topic of heroin came up. And dude, I had done
the black tar.
Yep, the black tar. Dude, I had done every drug in the fucking world up until this point. I mean, even the drugs that like nobody does, like GHB and mescaline and shit that's so uncommon. I had done fucking everything. I was a tweaker for a few years. Like, I had tried it all. And heroin was like this taboo word. And I had this image in my head of what I thought a heroin addict looked like.
Well, it used to be that was like the drug you would associate overdose with.
Exactly. And it was like most people die who do it.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I had this, like, you know, this whole thing. Little did I know what I was already doing was really no different than heroin.
Yeah.
Pharmaceuticals, when you take them like that, it's the same fucking thing, dude.
It's just, exactly.
It's exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so afraid to do it, but I was like, yep, fuck it, let's get it.
right.
Way cheaper, of course.
Yeah,
and we got it, and I'll never forget that, dude, the first time I smoked it, and I puked, and I fucking loved every minute of it.
Oh, yeah.
And that terrible taste in my mouth, and even the puking, I loved every second of it. And,
yeah, you get a little higher after you puke.
You do, yeah, yeah. And, dude, I fucking loved it. And it wasn't, I probably smoked it for a few weeks until a friend of mine taught me how to shoot up, and this dude I used to hang with, this, he was older than me, this skinhead dude, and he said, I'll hit you the first time, he goes, but you're a fucking grown man, you better watch how I do it, because I ain't gonna do it again after this, you're hitting yourself. And I paid attention, and
I took notes.
And yeah, I thought I liked smoking it, and I had no idea how
A whole other beast,
Other beast, dude. Now it's like two addictions now. I'm addicted to the dope, and I'm addicted to the needle.
Yeah.
And I fucking loved it. I loved the process of slamming as much as I loved the dope itself.
Yeah.
It was disgusting. And that was where the downward spiral began. I lost fucking everything, dude. Mm-hmm. Up until this point, I had never been taught money management. My mom's a great mom, and she did a lot of things near perfect in my life. And money management was not one of her strong suits, you know? And so,
I struggle with it too.
Yeah. And so I had no idea how to fucking manage money or any of that shit. And I lived in a house, a really fucking nice house, actually, with a buddy of mine and his wife who were partiers, but not hardcore drug addicts.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't take them long to figure out what I was doing. I'd have shady characters over in my room and locked doors and crumbled up foil everywhere. Yeah. You know?
And they sides.
Yeah. And eventually I didn't pay rent. And got kicked out.
Okay.
And I had a few cars at the time, probably three or four, and I totaled one. I nodded out driving and plowed into a parked car.
Oh, fuck.
And and ran, of course. And I'm sure the statute of limitations has expired on
okay,
guns.
Okay.
Yeah, this was a long time ago.
good. Just make sure.
Yeah, it was in Mexico. Yeah.
There's no statute of limitations there.
Yeah, there's no laws. And, dude, I sold one for dope money, got pulled over in one, the cops took it, and I just, it was like a month, dude, the house, the cars, the fucking everything. My mom called me on the phone one day, and she was pretty clever, man, and one thing I left out is after she retired from parole, she began an addiction of her own on pain meds.
Oh,
on
wow.
Opiates. Yeah, and so she's an addict.
No way.
And was one during this time, yeah.
Oh,
and
Jesus.
She called me and she said, she didn't even ask, like, are you doing drugs? And she said, are you shooting heroin? Like, she knew exactly what the fuck I was doing.
Uh-huh.
And she caught me at a moment of weakness. I was kicking and I started crying like a big baby.
Yeah.
And, yes, I need help. Blah, blah, blah.
Uh-huh.
And really, it was just a manipulation thing.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's when I went to the first time I ever went to detox.
Okay. How old were you?
Oh, man. I would have been 21.
Oh, probably no shit. 21. So you're pretty young.
Yeah, I think I was 21 the first time I went. And by the way, the second I found opiates, I gave up alcohol entirely.
That was an easy trade-off for me.
It was an easy trade-off, yep. I realized that the two didn't mix well in my stomach.
Yeah.
And if I was to pick one, it was going to be heroin over alcohol real quick. And so, I went to detox, and I thought, you know, I'll just get cleaned up. I won't be dependent anymore. I'll get out.
Yes.
And then I'll continue. But this time, I'm going to do it right. You know, like, mm-hmm. I can outsmart this fucking drug, like, for sure.
Yeah.
There's no way it's smarter than me.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, was I wrong. And I got out and got high the second I fucking got out.
Yep.
And
got strung out immediately.
And the funny thing is, once you've been strung out, you can't really go back to, like, you use one day, you're sick the next.
Yeah.
You can't, like, go back to, you know
what
I mean?
Yeah, can't reverse it.
No, once you cross that line, you've crossed it.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that. And so, you know, I'd fuck up for a while, end up homeless, sleep on people's couches, sleep in my car, whatever, end up back in detox when I decided I had enough, do the same fucking thing. Okay, last time I fucked this up, this time I'm going to do it right.
Uh-huh.
And dude, I couldn't tell you how many times over the years that I've been to different detoxes, but I can tell you that I've been to the same detox 15 times.
Jesus.
So when I say
Christ,
I'm a chronic relapser, I am a fucking chronic relapser.
Wow,
it's bad.
Dude.
Yeah. And so It was rough, man. I would sleep on someone's couch, right? Whose bridge I had not burned yet. And right. I'd wait till they were gone. And if I had money, they were safe and their belongings were safe. Yeah. But the second I was out of money, I'd fucking rob their house blind.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'd leave, obviously. Right. And then, or they'd let me use their car and I'd steal their fucking car and never bring it back. And yeah, or I'd be gone for a week on like a dope binge and, you know, and whatever. And then I'd find someone else, do the same fucking thing, dude. If I had money, your shit was fine. The second I ran out and I was sick, dude, there was nothing that bolted down or not that I wouldn't steal.
Mm-hmm.
And I was probably the worst thief I knew, man. And mm-hmm. Even when I got clean, I started to wonder, like, am I a klepto? Because even clean, I wanted to steal things when I first got clean. Mm-hmm. I couldn't stop. And luckily, that wasn't the case. But yeah, that was a pretty long road, man, until eventually I had burned every fucking bridge. And I dated a girl who was way too young for me. She was like 19, and she and her family lived in Vista. And I never had anything to do with anything north of like Escondido. Uh-huh. I didn't even know that place existed up there.
Vista, huh?
Yeah, Vista. What the fuck is that? Isn't there a water park there?
Yeah. Right.
That's all I knew it for, dude.
Yeah.
And it didn't take me long to fuck that relationship up. I got in fist fights with her dad. And stole from him too, and he was a tweaker biker, old biker dude. And tweakers don't like heroin addicts,
of course. So yeah, there's that animosity from the start. Yes,
exactly. We hated each other, dude. Fucking hated each other. And he was native, so he was a little bit crazy.
Yeah. Oh fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah, dude. I love native people. They're fun.
Fuck yeah, they are.
Yep. And it was wild. And eventually, when I couldn't stay with her and her dad anymore, I found myself living in a tent.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of kicked both of us out at the same time. And I told her, it's cool. I got like a 9-person tent. We'll just go post it up in these bushes. And it'll blow
Don't
over.
Don't worry, baby.
Yeah, it'll I blow over. Don't worry. I'll take care of us. I'm a provider, you know.
Yeah.
I couldn't even keep myself from getting dope sick, dude. And yeah, we did that. And she wised up pretty quick and was like, this is going nowhere.
Yeah.
And she got the fuck out of that tent and went back to her dad's house. And wow. I stayed in that tent. And man... It was every day was just wake up and rush as quick as I could to get to that fucking spoon so I wouldn't be any sicker than I had to be for any longer.
Because
once you get too sick, it's impossible to fucking find a vein and get well.
Yeah.
And I knew it was that close window. And I didn't see her much anymore. She got out while she could, which I'm grateful for.
Yeah.
I was dragging her through the mud and she didn't use either. Wow. She was just a pothead.
Wow. And
yeah, I dragged her through the mud. Yeah, I'm glad she got out.
Yeah, got out of there before.
She's doing great now, by the way.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, she's doing great. And that was probably the darkest times of my addiction, dude, when I was in Vista.
Yeah.
That went on for, God, 3 or 4 years probably.
Oh, wow, living in a tent?
Living in a tent. And showering maybe every 6 to 9 months once. And even during the summer, walking like 30 miles a day and shit. To hustle up stolen stuff and return stolen stuff and sell sacks and rip people off. And it was just insanity. And but I thought I had it made because I had like at this time I'd gotten this really bitchin' tent
from my nice
friend's
tent.
Mom who felt bad for me.
Very respectable.
Dude, she bought me like a 12-person tent.
Oh.
Dude, I had like a queen size air mattress,
dang.
A fucking recliner chair I found in the trash, a fucking dresser. I was like,
oh, shit,
dude,
yeah,
I'm
dude.
Telling you, I had it made. You
had it made right
dude,
there.
I mean,
bro.
If you're gonna be a bum, this is how to do
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Like, I should write a book. I'm telling you. I had like a fucking whole condo going on in there. And I would have all my junkie friends come over. And we'd all chill in my tent and get fucking loaded. Yeah. And it was known as Nick's Camp.
Nick's Camp?
The safe place to go to get loaded. It was on top of this dirt hill.
Oh,
you couldn't
fuck.
See it. It was right off of South Santa Fe Vista.
Okay.
Between Sycamore and Mar Vista.
Oh,
there was
all
this
right.
big flat dirt hill that they were going to, I think they've probably built something up there now.
Now, yeah.
But it was totally vacant. And that's where I had my tent.
Wow.
Nick's Camp. Yep, Nick's Camp, dude. And I pissed and shat in a 5-gallon bucket. For a majority of that time, then I would dig holes and dump it and use like a latrine thing, dude. Like I was in fucking Vietnam or something. It was crazy. And none of the stores would let me in to use their bathrooms. Everybody.
Yeah,
I couldn't go anywhere, you know.
For
everybody
sure.
had caught me stealing.
Mm-hmm.
And I had taught myself how to steal cigarettes at 7-Eleven, dude. Wait until the cashier like turns around and I would grab packs of cigarettes off the rack and fucking run out. And there's only so many 7-Elevens, you know what I mean? So, you know, dude, I taught myself how to steal everything.
Oh,
and the thought
yeah.
of spending money on something other than dope was, I mean, beyond impossible for me.
Yeah.
There was just no way. I mean, no way in hell.
Yeah.
And I would just spend my days walking around staring at the ground and picking up shit off the ground to see if it was like money or like I was just, dude, I acted like I was schizophrenic. It was it was fucking insane. And all this time I thought I had it made. And I had a friend out there and he lived under the tunnels, like in the sewer tunnels.
Oh, nice.
And I remember right before I got clean, we said to each other, we could do this for the rest of our fucking lives, dude. If we could shower at the beach or something like once every 6 months, right?
Yeah.
We could get around on trolleys and buses and whatnot and steal enough shit to support our habit and sell skimped sacks to make up money and blah, blah, blah. And we could do this every day for the rest of our life and never be dope sick again. And we were like, yeah, that's the plan. And we were totally good with it. I hadn't spoken to my mom in over 3 years and I was good with it, dude. And I used to have this thought of that somebody would come and tell me one day, hey, Nick, your mom passed.
Yeah.
And all I could think of was that's the last thing she would know is that she died and her son was a homeless fucking heroin addict.
Yeah.
And she was such an enabler that she had to cut off contact with me. Yeah. She got it when she got cleaned up. She got advice from good people who told her, dude, you got to get out of his life until he's ready.
Yeah.
You know, a mother loves her son, her only son at that so much that I think being in my life and not enabling me while I'm using is impossible
for
her.
Yeah.
And it's impossible for me to not manipulate her.
Of course.
And so she did the right thing and had to cut off contact with me. Yeah. And that was what eventually brought me down to my knees.
Yeah.
And I would have that thought all the time. And it was a shitty one. And it still wasn't enough to stop me.
Yeah.
Nothing was. You know, it was only when I was ready. And when I finally was, I don't even think there was like a big moment, an aha that or anything that happened. I think I just was exhausted. I was like 144 pounds and I'm a big dude.
Yeah.
And I looked like death, man. I have an old mugshot photo of myself at that weight and it doesn't even look like me. I looked like fucking Tom Hanks from Castaway.
Wilson.
Yeah, dude, just this beard, this fucking like year old beard and just no shower. I must have stunk like a fucking trash can. Like, dude, it was terrible. Fuck. And I thought I had it made. And when I finally was ready, dude, I called up my mom and I said, I know you probably don't believe it, but if you'll give me a ride to detox, because me taking the bus there, it's so much time for me to second guess my decision from Vista.
Yeah, every stop.
Every stop, dude.
Like, oh, I can leave. I can go back.
Yes. And so like I need to have that power removed and I need your help. And she had said no so many times, and why she said yes this time, I don't know, but it was the universe aligning shit the way it needed to happen, dude.
Yeah.
And before I went, I took a video of my camp, and it was elaborate by this point, years up there, and I shredded that fucking tent into pieces, dude.
Whoa.
And if I'm being honest, part of it was that I had beef with some of the other bums, and I didn't want them having my tent.
Pity, out of fucking pity, dude. You can't have this nice tent.
You motherfuckers, get your own tent.
Get your own tent.
Yeah, exactly.
I worked hard for this tent,
yeah. And but the other part of it was that I wanted to know I didn't have anything to go back to. If I knew it was there, it would make it so much fucking easier to leave detox and go right back to where I was. And so I did that and I videotaped it and I watched that video when I had like a year clean and it made me cry because of the level of how in NA it talks about living on like the animal level. Dude, I know animals that live 10 times better than how I was living. Like, it was fucking
animals would look at us like, what?
Yeah, like that poor son of a bitch. You know? And when I got to detox, this was probably my first real spiritual awakening. Over the years, you know, by the way, I'd left this out, but over the years, I had gone in and out of NA.
Okay.
And I had become known as the chronic relapser, for sure.
Okay.
And even times where I put a year together, at the end of that year, I would admit that I had been smoking pot for the entire fucking time. and I thought I was clean, and it just never any willingness to take the suggestions from other people ever.
Mm-hmm.
And so this time, this would have been October 28th of 2019 that I went in there.
Yeah.
And a few days into my stay there, this guy came and visited me.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a mutual friend of my mom and I. My mom went to the same detox when she got cleaned up.
Oh, okay.
So he knew both of us. He didn't work there or anything. He was just another addict in recovery.
Okay.
And he told me what I needed to hear in like a really fucked up way. Mm-hmm. And nobody had ever had the balls to do this before. And he said, dude, if you're not going to get clean this time, do your mom a favor and just never contact her again.
Wow.
And and that was like hard to hear.
That's a real hard.
And at first I was like, "Who the fuck are you trying to split my mom and I?" Like, fuck
you, buddy. Mind your own fucking business.
Yeah, mind your own business. But then I thought about it, and he told me that he had been watching her come into this aftercare IOP group once a week, and crying and wondering if I was dead or alive, and saying how relieved she was every time she'd find out I was in jail because it meant I was alive.
Yeah.
And she was getting skinnier and skinnier, and like
It was taking a toll on her.
Dude, it was taking a toll. I mean, it was, you know, metaphorically killing her, but probably literally killing her also. Mm-hmm. Physically, spiritually, everything. And but the way he said it was hurtful. And it broke me down. And I owe that man a lot today because he had the balls to tell me what I needed to hear without any concern for my feelings. And that's what I needed. My whole life, man, I had been everything's been sugar-coated to me. And you know what I mean? And finally, someone had the balls to be real. And that was like a punch in the face, dude.
Yeah.
And so I made a commitment to myself that I would give it, you know, all I had. And I had to really think about what had led to the constant relapsing. Even when I was in the rooms of NA, why couldn't I fucking stay clean? And I used to look at people who had a year clean like they were gods. I couldn't believe that someone could do that for a fucking year. Yeah, dude. You know what I mean? Without weed, without drinking, without kratom or some other bullshit. Literally clean. Yeah, it was
raw dog in life.
Yes, exactly. And that was such an alien concept to me.
Yeah.
And so when I got out, I hit up my old sponsor who had previously told me not to contact him until I had 6 months clean. he caught me shooting dope in his house.
Oh, okay.
So, nice. And I think I waited a little while. When I contacted him, I was able to identify what I'd been doing wrong all along. And I'm so stubborn, and I thought I was too smart for this and all that. And there was always a suggestion or two or three that I wouldn't take. And they were really simple shit. And maybe it's not for everybody, but for me, it was valid. Don't get into a relationship in the first year. That was so important for me because I'm sickly codependent.
Yeah.
Sickly. And it was like that, and it was, you know, 90 meetings in 90 days and all the simple shit that we always hear in NA. And I could do most of those except the relationship thing. I couldn't do it. And I'd get 30 days and think I had it made. And I was like, Mr. Recovery.
I'm ready.
Let's get married.
Babies and all that.
And every time I'd get into a relationship, I hadn't done any work on Nick. So I would dump everything I had, which probably wasn't much, into the other person. And I would neglect myself. And then I would fucking get high. And it was this like routine of like I'd get a job, a car, a girlfriend, and then I'd get high. And it was just the same pattern all over again. Yeah. And so I made the commitment. I said, fine, I won't do a relationship for a year. I'll stay completely single. I won't even hook up with girls. Nothing.
Hey, yo.
And I did it, dude. And my old sponsor said, you got to practice the three M's. Meetings, meditation, and masturbation. He said, that's how you'll get through it, dude.
Wow.
And yeah, he was right. I mean, that's how you get through it.
Thank God for masturbation.
Yeah, dude, thank God. Yeah. The other shit helps too, but yeah.
Wow.
And he was right, man. And I not only did I make it that year, but at the end of that year, I looked at myself and I realized that I still had some work to do. And so I ended up going like 19 months without any contact, like sexually or romantically at all with a female. And none. And I had girls that were friends, but they knew where I stood with it. And after 19 months had gone by, I talked with them about it. And I said, I think I'm ready, you know, to try this again. And when I did get into a relationship, it was with this girl, Nancy, who's in the program. And her and I are still like really good friends to this day. And it was short. It was like a 30-day relationship. When it ended, I didn't try to fucking kill myself or get high. The world wasn't over. It was like I knew how to, I had learned enough about Nick that I had enough self-esteem to realize that if I wasn't going to work out with her, that there was somebody else out there for me.
Sure.
You know? And that was huge for me. I never had self-esteem.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that's really common amongst addicts, but we have so much that we can be proud about.
Yeah.
But we've just, you know, we've conditioned ourselves to hate ourselves. Yeah. So much self-sabotage and self-abuse over the years. Mm-hmm. And another relationship came and went, and the same thing. Okay, that one's not right for me either.
Yeah.
And what's funny is when I finally did find the girl who was right for me, I wasn't even looking for a fucking relationship. I had decided, you know what? Fuck relationships. Yeah. I'm just going to be a little bit promiscuous here for a while.
Yeah.
And I bought memberships to every fucking dating app there was. I was on Tinder and Plenty of Fish and Bumble and all this shit. And and I was having fun.
Yeah.
I wasn't getting high. I wasn't drinking. Yeah. And I was hooking up with different girls like all the time. And it was great.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is so much better. Maybe I'll just like adopt a kid and be a single dad and stay out of relationships. Cause let's be honest, they're fucking hard. No, relationships are hard. And then I met this girl on Bumble, man, and she was in NA, and we knew each other already. And she kind of came over and just never left. And, and that was it.
Can't get rid of her.
Yep, couldn't get rid of her, and nor did I want to.
And then,
on Halloween, it was supposed to be Halloween. It was the day after. But on Halloween last year, I proposed to her.
Oh, fuck yeah,
and
dude.
And she said yeah. And I actually waited. You know what I mean? I waited like a year for the proposal. I waited a year.
Was it like a month?
No, which would have been like common fashion.
Which is very common.
Yes, that's usually what I do. I want what I want, and I want it now.
Yeah.
And patience is not a virtue I possess very well.
Fuck yeah.
No, and yeah, dude. And so, and we're still together, and we're getting married in June. And
fuck yeah, dude.
Dude, it's fucking
congratulations,
wild.
Dude.
I lived in a sober living when I met her. I managed a sober living for this lady, Maria. That woman saved my life. And so I managed for her for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And Janae was living with me there. Mm-hmm. We shared a fucking bedroom there. it was crazy. And then when the time came, I had been working my ass off for Amazon and delivering packages with my own car.
Oh,
and which really doesn't come out to that much money.
No way.
But I had taught myself how to save money a little bit. What really taught me how to save money, and keep in mind, my entire life I'd never had more than maybe a few $100 to my name.
Sure.
Even not in my active addiction, I just didn't know what money management was.
Mm-hmm.
And we all got that $1,200 stimulus check.
Oh yeah, yep.
And I went to the bank and they said, "Do you want to put that in a checking account or a savings account?" And I was like, mm-hmm. "Yeah, I was like, huh? I have a savings account. I didn't even know I had one." And I was like, "A savings account."
By the way, I
had been in check systems for a long time because of the fake check shit when I was a kid, and I wasn't allowed to have a bank account. And this was the first time I was legally allowed to have a bank account. And so I opened a fucking savings account or whatever, and I said, "Yeah, you know what? Put it in the savings. Why not?" And just seeing that I had money in a savings account gave me so much self-worth.
Yeah.
It was like, holy shit, I'm not like completely destitute and broke. And so I would work my ass off and I would add money to it. And then I'd be like, wow, 1200 is like 1500 now.
Yeah.
And that little bit would grow and grow. Yeah, yeah. And I realized that I got more enjoyment off of seeing money saved than I got off of buying material shit.
Mm-hmm.
And my whole life was material everything, dude.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what really started it for me. And so after a little while of living in that house in La Mesa and managing it, I decided I wanted to start my own business.
Mm.
And I looked at how much money I had, and it wasn't, you know, in today's, you know, amount, in today's, you know, society, it's really not that much money.
Yeah.
But it was just barely enough to find a house for rent and furnish it with everything, nice shit and new shit. And try to use whatever decent reputation I had made in NA to try to help other people and get them housing, because sober living had saved my life.
Yeah.
And I was, rehabs and all that shit was proposed to me for years, dude. Every time I went to detox, the counselors there would tell me and tell my mom, he needs fucking rehab. And I'd say, nope, there's no way in hell I'm going. I went to one rehab, House of Metamorphosis.
Oh, me too.
Well, yeah, I went there one time. I stayed for like a month.
That's pretty impressive.
I know. When I got there, I was clean for a month.
Uh-huh.
Which is crazy. The night I got there, I got loaded with my bunkie.
That's very common. In
very common, horses. Right? Yes, it is. And turned out the dude had been locked up in jail, and he somehow got like an ounce of black in his shoe, and they didn't find it. So when he got released and got sent to HOM, he had that fucking ounce in his shoe.
Oh,
so he
Jesus.
Got like half the place strung out, you know. We were all strung out.
That quick.
Yep. And as soon as the dope ran out at HOM,
I gotta get out of here.
And everybody else is like sick and in their bunks, like sick and shit. Like, you guys are fucking idiots.
Yeah.
I am getting the fuck out of
here.
And what's crazy, and this is what I mean when I say the universe aligns things for me, right? This is fucking crazy. So my counselor there, his name was Larry Jones. Older black dude. Cool as fuck.
Yeah.
But Larry's like, if you're gonna do it, great, I'll help you. But if you're not, you're not. What the fuck? He's not gonna beg you to stay clean, right? So when I said, hey man, I want a discharge, he goes, okay, sign here. He didn't try to talk me out of it or nothing. And I discharged and I fucking ran down to TJ and I was sick of being sick. Yeah. And I ran down to TJ to my little pharmacy down there and he fronted me an eight ball and I got loaded and that started a really long run. Oh, and so what's crazy is Larry Jones is the husband of Maria, the lady who owned the sober living that I lived at. And I didn't fucking know any of this.
Wow. Yeah,
crazy shit, right? Crazy.
Fucking small world.
Small world. And so the reason sober living is so passionate for me, when I got out of detox this last time, right, I had been staying the final few days, I was staying with a friend who I shot dope with.
Uh-huh.
And in downtown, he had like a county-funded apartment, right? Uh-huh. And when I got out of Mesa Vista, that's where I detoxed, I went back to go stay with him. And he stopped using when I went in.
Mm-hmm.
And I stopped using when I went in. He didn't go into detox. So we both had like a week clean, if that. He might have had less. And here we are, you know what I mean, living in this fucking apartment. I was sleeping on the floor.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a matter of time before we get high again, mm-hmm. for sure, right? For sure. I went to a meeting one night at the Life Center on El Cajon Boulevard, okay. which she also owns. Oh, same person.
No shit.
Yep. And she saw me, and I hadn't seen her in years. And years ago, I remember she mentioned that she was going to open a sober living.
Uh-huh.
And so just, you know, small talk, she saw me and I told her what had been going on. And ironically, she was like the one bridge I had never burned.
Mm-hmm.
My relationship with her was still good. And I said, did you ever open that sober living? And she said, yeah, it's like right around the corner.
Uh-huh.
I said, oh, good for you, man. And she said, where are you living? And mm-hmm. I told her, she said, you got to get the fuck out of there. You're going to get high.
Yeah.
And I said, probably, but like my alternative is the streets. And I'll definitely get high if I do that.
Yeah, for sure.
She said, you need a bed? And I said, I'd love one, dude, but I don't have a job. I don't have money. I don't have any hope of getting money.
Yeah.
And she said, I don't care. Take the bed. Move in. And and that was the first person in a really long time who had stuck out their hand to me offered me some trust and a chance.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what that felt like, man.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody had trusted me in over a decade. I was just a piece of shit. I mean, there was no reason to trust me. And it felt so good that someone trusted me.
Uh-huh.
And it was about 6 months later that she made me the manager. And then,
wow.
Yep. Cool. And I owe that woman my life.
That's fucking amazing.
Who knows,
dude,
where the fuck I'd be today had she not done that. And so that's why sober livings are so passionate for me. It literally saved my life. And while rehabs never worked out, I can't stand being locked somewhere and told I can't leave.
Yeah,
and I know that's the same sucks, for a lot of people. You know, I need to feel like a productive member of society. And I'm not knocking rehabs. If rehab works for you, fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Fucking do it. That's great. I wish I could have embraced rehabs the way some people do. And I believe in them. I do. But for me, and I know a lot of others like me, it doesn't. It's just not the right thing. I need to feel like I'm productive, that I have a job, that I'm, you know, I see my sponsor on a regular basis and I'm working steps. I need to feel
that. You know, you get that little bit of freedom.
Exactly. I need that like balance. You know what I mean? I need that little bit of freedom and, you know, a little bit of accountability.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what did it for me. And it was like the perfect recipe for recovery.
Wow.
And when I started, you know, when I got that first house, it took me a year to find it. And the real estate agent happened to be in recovery. Again, the universe is just aligning
shit.
What are the fucking odds? The real estate agent had 10 years in AA. And when I told her what I wanted to do with the house, she was like, I think the owner will go for that.
Wow.
And sure enough, the owner did. And I needed to have like $16,000 a month in provable income on paper in order to rent this house. You kidding me, dude? I worked for Amazon. I made like $2,500 a month. You know what I mean? I had no fucking proof of that.
Yeah,
I
told her,
I said, dude, if you're willing to like take a leap of faith and a chance on me, I promise you I'll make that income and I'll do what I need to do. Give me a few months or something.
Yeah.
But I don't have that right now. I can offer you first month security,
maybe
second month, and that's it. And she said, you know what? Fuck it. I'll take a chance on you. And she did. And I filled the house in 2 weeks.
Yeah, and, dude.
It was amazing. I
filled SD Sober Living 1, right?
That was SD Sober Living 1. Yep. And I filled it. And then my original business plan was to open a house once a year.
Uh-huh.
And it was seven months later that I opened the second house.
Wow.
And that one, that's a really cool house. Has a swimming pool and shit. And it's like, dude, I could never even have imagined renting a room in a house like that, let alone having the house as part of my business.
Yeah.
Just fucking nuts, dude. I mean, you know, a short time ago, I lived in a tent and pooped in a bucket. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's fucking nuts. And and I was like, okay, I'm going to chill. Two houses, right?
Two houses.
I filled that house in a month. And then I get to the point where I'm turning people away. And I hate fucking turning people away.
Yeah.
Not even for a financial motive. I just hate telling somebody no.
Like, sorry.
When I know that most sober livings are full and they got nowhere to go. It's like it's a hard thing to tell someone who's seeking help.
Yeah.
And I want to be in a position where I can always say, yes, I can help you.
Uh-huh.
I hate saying say no. And so my goal is to never have to say no. And so on January 1st, I got the third house, SD Sober Living 3.0, where we had our party.
Yes.
And that house filled up in like a month.
Yeah, I heard. I was like, what?
Yeah, it's crazy. I didn't expect it to fill that quickly. but, you know, there, I have some mentors in the sober living industry who have been doing this a long time, who have way more houses than I do. And and I got the same response from pretty much all of them. And it's that, dude, if you do this for the right reasons, it'll work out. And so helping people comes first, always.
Absolutely.
I'll never kick somebody out who's doing good and is trying and staying clean and they don't have rent money. I'll never kick somebody out for an inability to pay. That would be fucking wrong, man.
Yeah.
You know, and
absolutely.
Yeah. My goal is to see people succeed first. And of course it's a business. There's nothing wrong with wanting to make money in life. Yeah. People think that because you profit on a sober living that you're a criminal.
Dude, right.
You know what I mean?
Well, why don't you invest,
motherfucker? Yeah. Like. Yeah. Open your own, dude. It's there for anyone. But yeah, dude, helping people comes first. And it's absolutely mind boggling when I think about who I was 4.5 years ago.
Yeah, dude.
And dude, I would have been happy with fucking 20% of the shit I have today. And I don't mean just the material shit.
Yeah.
It's the relationships, it's the trust, it's the everything.
Yeah.
And you know, when I hit a year clean, my first year, that same fucking night at Fairmont Park, this kid came up to me and said, "Hey man, will you sponsor me?"
Wow.
It's like, dude, I have a year today. Like, give me a fucking break.
give me a
few days to enjoy having a year clean. You know what I mean? But of course I said yes. My sponsor told me that, dude. You never turn down. You never say no.
You never say no.
Never say no, dude.
If someone's asking, I have that same policy.
Yep. You never fucking tell someone no, dude. And for all you know, that could be the night that he gets told no and he goes out and he smokes some Fetty and fucking ODs and dies.
Yeah.
You could be that thing that saves that person's life.
Yeah.
And, and yeah, so I never say no. And and I have a few sponsees today. I never thought in my life I'd be able to sponsor. And, you know, there was a dream that I used to have, not a literal dream, but like a dream of mine, a vision. And when I was using it, especially in the days of the tent.
Yes.
And I would think about like the circle of life. And like, you know, you're young, your parents take care of you.
Yeah.
As you get older, you take care of your parents.
Yes.
Right? And it was so sad that I realized that would never be me. I thought, that's never gonna fucking happen. I'll never be in the position where I can provide anything for my mom. Yeah. I don't even have two parents to worry about. I have one and I still can't do anything for her. And I'll never be that kid. Mm-hmm. And it was really sad for me. Mm-hmm. And not too long ago, my mom's roommate died.
Yeah.
And the roommate's family decided to sell the house that my mom and her had lived in.
Okay.
And because I kept my shit together and I fucking stayed clean, I have an extra bedroom at my house and I can house my mom.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude.
And it's like, dude, I don't care if she never moves out, because getting to see my mom every day and knowing that I'm helping her, it's like, dude, that is a fucking lost dream has reawoken. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I never thought in my life that I'd be able to do something good for somebody else. Dude. And so, dude, my life is it's a complete 180. I'm responsible for over 60 guys. I'm responsible for my fiance, my mom, a dog, two cats.
Yeah, dude.
And, and I love it. And, you know, I went through therapy for the first few years of being clean and I learned about values. And that's been a big part of my recovery, is learning what my values are. Cause I didn't have any fucking values before. And being a provider, being a man, having responsibilities, having compassion, helping others. These are all values that in order for me to be happy in life and to keep progressing in life, I have to practice those values on a daily basis. I have to. Just like spiritual principles. It's the same fucking thing. I have to practice these values. And today I can say that I practice almost all of them.
Fuck yeah, dude.
And, you know, you can't save everyone. Every now and then somebody has to get kicked out. And it's the worst part of this job is having to tell someone they have to go.
You have to go.
It fucking sucks. I had to do it today. And it sucks. But, you know, for every one person that gets kicked out, maybe two more make it. And stay clean and build a life.
Yeah.
And I'm honored to be a part of other people's journeys.
Fuck yeah, dude.
And I'm grateful I got to do this too.
Fuck yeah, dude. Well, you know, I just want to tell you, man, like, you know, I appreciate everything you do for the community. When Nick asked me to do the party, it was an easy fucking yes. Like, it was a fucking easy yes, dude. I back you up 100%, dude.
Likewise.
Any fucking party you want to throw, I'll be there. I'll be your Van Wilder. You know what I mean? And dude, I swear to God, dude, I really appreciate you coming here, man. And like, you know what I mean? Like, and seeing your growth, man, is just fucking inspirational, dude.
Thanks,
and brother. Man, I really appreciate you coming here, brother.
Of course. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Thanks. Take care.
You too.
Bye, everyone.